This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. This week, we continue our monthly series on aging. For many, housing can become a concern as a person's needs and limitations change with age. In 2010, a third of seniors had annual incomes below the poverty line, making it hard to afford many housing options. And as more of the population reaches 65 and older, supplying affordable and supportive senior housing is becoming more of a concern for local communities. Joining us today to talk about housing options for seniors in the Cooley region are Todd Mandel, Community Development Director at Cooley Cap, Patrick Dinger, Executive Director for the La Crosse County Housing Authority, and Gail Brussel, Assistant to the Executive Director at Bethany St. Joseph Corporation. And so each of you kind of represent a different side of senior housing. So I just want to take a moment to kind of, explain what your organizations do. So Patrick, let's start with you.
Okay. Hi. I'm with the La Crosse County Housing Authority, and we offer subsidized housing for elderly, disabled, and families. We have duplex housing and we have manor housing. And it's general occupancy, so you could have a parent and a child in a one-bedroom, but typically if you have elderly or disabled, usually they request a one-bedroom only. So, and we have those houses in six different communities all in La Crosse County, and we have 244 apartments spread out over the six different communities.
And you mentioned, you know, that it's general occupancy, and I know that that has been kind of a recent change. You know, how do you think that's impacted the housing options?
Well, it's the most impact probably would be our one-bedroom manors, because initially, decades ago, it's, you know, senior only, or so it was interpreted by a lot of organizations. And then it was senior disabled preference, and we still give a senior disabled preference, but you do have general occupancy. So as I mentioned, you could have, say, a single parent could live in a one-bedroom with a child, because we have up to two persons per bedroom. So that's how you could end up with a single parent in a one-bedroom situation. So, and then for the disabled population, people living with a disability, it can be up to 50% in some of our buildings. And so then the seniors, they had to adjust to the population change. So, because initially, like I say, decades ago, they moved in with the expectation that they would be living just with seniors. So for them, that's been the biggest adjustment probably.
Mm-hmm. And what does that kind of adjustment entail? You know, how can living next to a young family or other individuals mm-hmm. kind of, you know, impact a senior?
Right. Well, there's depending on the disability, you know, you could have people living with mental health problems, and sometimes that can overflow into the and affect the community. And sometimes you have seniors who are set in their way, and so they can, you know, it's always been this way, and they expect it to stay that way. So sometimes you have a clash of cultures and generation gap. So that's the biggest thing that we see, I guess.
And Gail, you know, tell me a little bit about the different options that Bethany St. Joseph provides, because I know it's not just, you know, one option.
Right. Bethany St. Joseph Corporation offers various housing options, and one of them is the nursing home segment. We have senior housing for independent and assisted living, and then we also offer adult daycare services. So it's a broad spectrum, and the younger population can be in the adult day services or in the nursing home. But the housing is mainly for seniors 62 and above or 55 with disability.
And I know that, you know, as the baby boomers have kind of reached the aging population, that, you know, a lot of people have commented that they're really changing what aging looks like and kind of what is expected of different senior resources. You know, do you think that representing kind of the private sector for senior housing, do you think that is changing those expectations?
Yes, and we're seeing, the baby boomers aren't quite hitting us yet, but the expectations of even my age or people that I work with would be housing that would accommodate the modern technology that is prevalent in younger people's lives right now. But the seniors that we have coming into our building, we're set up to accept 62 and above. But what we're finding is usually when people are finally making the decision to transition to independent senior housing or assisted living, they may be in their 80s or 90s. They're not coming when they're 62 necessarily. Just the older population are waiting longer to make that transition. The younger person that you're talking about, what are their expectations to transition to that type of housing?
What options are they expecting to be able to have when they're thinking about making a switch when it comes to housing?
The option of having their homes taken care of, more or less, if they're in a home, not having to worry about the shoveling and the lawn mowing and the home caretaking. So moving into a congregate living or the assisted living or the independent housing, they don't have to worry about that anymore. It's taken care of. Utilities are all included in the rates. They don't have to pay a separate bill. Their families feel good about them being together with other people, so they don't have to necessarily check in on them so frequently. So I guess that's the expectation, is that they feel more comfortable being around other people.
And Todd, how does CoolieCap assist seniors as far as housing?
Similar to Patrick, we develop rental housing, sometimes focused on seniors, sometimes just low-income rental housing that seniors are eligible for. We tend to focus on very small communities in rural western Wisconsin in small format, maybe 10-unit, 8-unit, 6-unit type properties. Our most significant work, though, really comes in doing rehabilitation services for seniors who own their housing. Rehab needs in housing stock in rural Wisconsin is a significant crisis. And then that crisis is only compounded when you look at when you focus simply on the senior subset. Right now, we, based on our own internal waiting list of people waiting for housing assistance, we would need probably $9 or $10 million to completely wipe out that waiting list. And based on our own experience, within a year, that waiting list would repopulate. Probably a half of that, 50% of that waiting list is seniors, and so they represent about a $5 million unfunded liability in our rural communities. And, you know, we're trying to tackle that problem basically at 10% of that funding every year if we're lucky. And so it's a real challenge. We find ourselves having to have conversations with seniors about, is this the best housing choice for you? We understand that this is where you've lived most of your life. This is where you've raised your children, where you have friends in the community. But do you have the income to maintain this asset? Do you have the cash flow to support this house? Do you need the 4-bedroom, 3-bedroom house? And it is a challenge. And similar to what you just heard, we find the same thing, that our seniors are holding onto those houses until they're 80 or 85 years old. And it's, we understand, partly, if for no other reason, they're doing it because that house, especially for low-income families, that house represents almost their entire wealth. And so they don't have much wealth to pass along to the next generation, and they're afraid that if they liquidate that wealth now, it'll get chewed up in housing and senior costs, and they won't have anything to pass along to their children. And it represents, in so many cases, literally the only thing they have to pass along to their children.
And so when you're talking about, you know, these kind of housing rehabilitation, you know, are you talking about specifically just for preparing a house maybe to be sold, or is it just, you know, repairing a house so a senior can continue occupying that house?
It is many facets. So it's many times it's dealing with years of deferred maintenance, whether that's plumbing that's been bad for a long time or a basement that's been falling apart for a long time, but now it's failing because they just haven't had the money to deal with that leak, whether it's a roof that has been leaking for a while, and now that small leak is a big leak, and that big leak has gone ahead and impacted a number of other systems, whether it's critical systems that have fallen apart. The electrical was 60 amp to start with, and they've been trying to run a 200 amp household off it, and they've been they've been threatened with a condemnation order, or their plumbing doesn't meet code. In rural communities, well water is a ridiculous level problem. We have so many seniors with fouled wells, non-functional wells. Every year we have at least 10 stories of seniors who are trucking water from their neighbor's house a quarter, a half, a mile, 2 miles away because they don't have potable water. And it's not cheap. It's $15,000, depending on in some of these communities, if they're up on a ridge to get to a well or a septic system. In the increasing enforcement environmental laws obviously are important, but they have ramifications, right? And so that septic system that worked 2 years ago now fails and has to be replaced. And without it, it's a condemnation order. So the increasing health and safety codes and the enforcement of those codes is a good thing. We support it. It needs to happen. At the same time, there are real implications when that happens in rural communities where folks just don't have the assets and the cash. And they can't just go to a bank and get a home equity loan because they don't have the cash flow to support that. They can get a reverse mortgage, but reverse mortgages are tricky. We don't have a lot of lenders in this area that do them, and they are open and ripe for abuse by predatory and non-ethical lenders.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about senior housing in the Cooley region, what's available and what's still needed as the population continues to age. We're here with Todd Mandel, Community Development Director at Cooley Cap, Patrick Dinger, Executive Director of La Crosse County Housing Authority, and Gail Bressel, Assistant to the Executive Director at Bethany St. Joseph Corporation. And Todd's been talking a lot about different issues that, specifically affect rural populations. Patrick, serving all of La Crosse County, not just the city of La Crosse, do you also see specific challenges for seniors in rural areas?
Well, yeah, the challenge is transportation. We've had a couple move out of a public housing unit because they couldn't afford the gas to go back and forth to their medical appointments because our communities, the six of them, start at French Island, is the closest to La Crosse, and go out as far as Mindoro. So that we've seen that situation where they've given up and they actually chose to live in their vehicle for a while because they could not afford the gas to go back and forth. So transportation, I think, would be the main issue. And then different seniors, they want to live in the communities where they grew up or where they go to church and the family and friends are. So even though we have an opening perhaps in a town that's a little farther out, if it's not where their church, family, and friends are, they will decline an opening and choose to stay on a waiting list to wait for that particular community that they're interested in.
Mm-hmm. And, Todd, other than some of these maintenance issues and other things that you've been talking about, are there other specific challenges for seniors in rural areas?
Just the aspect of rural housing, those challenges that come with rural housing, I think, simply increase for the elderly population, the senior population. There's a lot of hidden costs when you live rural. Carl Green, the extension agent for La Crosse County, did an excellent analysis of comparing the cost of living in the city of La Crosse with the cost of living outside the city of La Crosse in a rural community. And it seems on first pass that living in a rural community where you have a well and a septic and maybe using fuel oil or propane, it seems cheaper because you don't have this giant tax bill. But if you're not putting away funds to deal with all of those replacement costs then and potential price spikes, you can find yourself upside down really, really fast. And that problem is only exacerbated when you're on a fixed income. So two or three years ago when we had the propane crisis and propane's prices went up 500% in a winter, we had any number of seniors who had to abandon their homes in the middle of winter and go somewhere because they just couldn't afford propane and there wasn't enough money to help fill their tanks. A household that has cash flow that are working and have more income coming in has the capacity at times to deal with that kind of a crisis, but if you're on a fixed income, you just don't. And then what do you do? Same again, if your well goes bad, if your septic goes bad, if your house starts to leak, transportation, these are all challenges that simply become exacerbated for the senior population.
And Gail, as far as private options for seniors in rural areas, are there enough spots? Are there enough options for seniors in our region?
We have found that communities have asked us to build in their communities so that a person doesn't always have to come to La Crosse for their housing needs. So we are in six communities We're in La Crosse, Onalaska, Holman, Galesville, West Salem, and Westby. So that's three counties and six communities. We find that they appreciate that. They don't have to leave their hometown, Patrick was mentioning that they want to stay within their community, by their church, by their families. And just to mention for Todd is families want their elderly person out of the home sometimes too in that rural situation. They don't feel comfortable with leaving grandma or mom or dad there. So it's the families that are affected too, not just the senior trying to hold on to that home. It's the families getting exasperated for, let's get you on to the next spot. So we offer those next spots. The funding for that is the private pay out of their own pockets. But we do work with Western Wisconsin Cares and Care Wisconsin, which are managed care organizations for people who are needing to apply for medical assistance, that they can be in our housing with help, financial help. So our pricing is such that a person could manage possibly to pay with their own Social Security or their pensions and still have a place to live. So we're considered affordable in that manner. So we're meeting that need, the affordability.
Absolutely. And so, you know, at your locations in, in Galesville or West Salem, smaller communities than La Crosse, do you think those communities are a little bit different than your populations in La Crosse?
How so do you mean?
Just, are there different things that you guys provide to those communities in smaller towns or, maybe there isn't a difference?
I think just being able to stay in their own town is a major plus. All of our housing units do offer activities and programs and keeping people active if they want to be. They can certainly do their own thing, but they all offer that. There's not much different as far as whether you're living in La Crosse or Holman. We have excellent staff that meet the needs of the people who are living there and find out what their interests are and do the programming, planned outings and opportunities. So I wouldn't say that there's a lot of difference. It's just whether you're in La Crosse or Westby, or the services are similar and good.
And Patrick, how do you think that senior housing has changed in the last 5-10 years? You know, what kind of factors are influencing senior housing?
I deal with non-services housing mostly. So I know that there's residential care apartment communities, assisted living. There's different facilities that offer more services, but we don't have support services to offer. So for us, it's basically just a one-bedroom standard, no support services, which is what is needed more of. We see that when we get whether it's a disabled person or a senior person, sometimes there's more support services. And we do, if something's brought to our attention, we will make a call to the County Aging Disability Resource Center or Vulnerable Adult Report if we see that somebody's not taking care of themselves anymore and somebody needs to step in. Then we will make that call and have them come and do an evaluation to see if the person does need more support services.
And Todd, are you seeing changes in the last, 5-10 years of what senior housing looks like in this area?
From our perspective, we've definitely seen more requests for accessibility and modification assistance, a much more desire to age in place, not just in rural communities, in La Crosse, in Onalaska, in Holman. I think where people may before have been willing to sell their home and maybe transition, they're coming to us now in numbers that we hadn't seen probably. I've been at Kulikap for 11 years, and I think my first five, we've seen over the last five much more, a much higher level of requests for ramps and first floor bedroom additions or remodels and moving laundry up to the first floor and expanding bathroom sizes. I think that's also a relation to improved care, healthcare and access to healthcare. Folks that have conditions that previously may have put them in a nursing home or may have required them to go in assisted living now that condition where it may have been debilitating before is chronic but manageable, and so they can stay in their home. And so that then triggers, but it triggers the need for these modifications and accessibility options because it's manageable, but it's only manageable if you're in the right environment. So that has definitely been a change for us. It's, I mean, 10 years ago, we didn't have any specific funding for accessibility, and we bring in about $200,000 a year now that focuses just on accessibility modifications.
That's Todd Mandel, Community Development Director at Cooley Cap, here with us today to talk about housing options for seniors in local communities. Also joining our conversation is Patrick Dinger, Executive Director of La Crosse County Housing Authority, and Gail Brussel, Assistant to the Executive Director at Bethany St. Joseph Corporation. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Todd, do you think that there are enough options for people in La Crosse? I know we've been talking about options in rural communities, but, you know, are we seeing, you know, waiting lists for trying to get into assisted living facilities? Are we seeing, you know, people saying, you know, I'm ready to move on, but there just aren't enough options?
From our perspective, we certainly have folks who, some number of folks who would like to move on, but there just isn't, they don't have the income or the assets in order to do that. And so, you know, Patrick spoke earlier about the one bedroom affordable model, the 30% of your income model that is the most in short supply. And we see that in the folks coming to us as well, right? They come to us at that point because they don't have the income to move elsewhere. There's no room in public housing either through the city or the county. And so what are their options? Their options are they're going to stay where they are. And they're certainly not going to move to a rental, just a market rate rental, not when they own their house outright. And so they come to us because now they have these needs that need to be addressed in their home, but they don't have the money to deal with them. And it's challenging because there's only so much rehab dollars to go around, and we oftentimes can't address everything they need. We have to kind of pick the two or three critical issues. Oftentimes those aren't the issues they want dealt with. You know, windows are a great example. Please replace all my windows, they're drafty. And we have to have that conversation of like, drafty windows really aren't the energy loss that you think they are. And the fact that your furnace is 47 years old is far more of a significant problem, and you have a leaking roof. So we're going to deal with those things. And we're going to let the windows just be the windows because the next buyer can deal with the windows, right? But it's a challenge, and it's a particular challenge when you're talking with those seniors because it's a hard time mapping out what the end game is for them. Their income isn't going up. Their Social Security isn't going up enough that their situation, if they can't afford a private pay option now, they're not going to afford a private pay option in 5 years unless one of their children suddenly has a lot more income that they can share. We're not building more public housing in the United States. Congress has made it very clear that public housing is something they would like to get out of, not do more of. And so then really, what's the end game option? There isn't a great one. And so where that ends up, you just, like, internal, we don't necessarily have that conversation with them, but internally as a staff, we have that conversation of, well, like, we have forestalled the inevitable on this house for 7 years. But what happens in 7 years? We can't come back and help them again. Just because of the rules we're under. And their situation isn't going to change markedly. So where does that go? Do they end up in a nursing home? Do they end up living in a house that eventually is going to be condemned? What happens? We don't know because we don't have a crystal ball, but it's a sticky place to be in.
And Patrick, you know, what are you seeing as far as waiting lists? Is there a great need for more spaces?
Right. So for example, out of the 140 subsidized, let's say one bedrooms that our typical senior disabled population go into, we have 56 people on the waiting list waiting. So about a third. And we have, I checked, we had about 22 per year turnover rate. So at that rate, it would take approximately 2 years to house everyone if they were stayed on the waiting list. So now sometimes people will apply for other agencies at the same time. They'll apply for city housing, county housing, other subsidized housing communities. So the reality of that, if we break it down, I did check. So we have people waiting back to March of 2015 for like Onalaska, for example. So that's over 1 year. But then on the other hand, French Island, for example, town of Campbell, waiting only since March of this year. So sometimes the wait can be months, and sometimes it can be year and a half. And so that just depends, again, on how flexible they are when they apply. We have six communities, and they can circle one of them or circle all six, and that increases their odds if they circle all sixes. If they're more flexible, then we can get them housed faster. So I would say, you know, approximately a year waiting list on average is what I would say. We tell people 6 months to a year on average.
And are you seeing seniors kind of planning ahead, planning for, in a year, I'm really going to need to be, you know, in a housing authority situation? Or, how often is that need very immediate?
We see both, because sometimes people have a medical emergency or something and they can't stay in their house anymore. As Todd was saying, it's not accessible, whatever. So sometimes it's immediate, and we'll have social workers call us from the nursing home or the rehabilitation center stating that so-and-so, you know, had a stroke or whatever, and they now need an accessible apartment. So we see that end of the spectrum, and then we see people who are planning on retiring, and they putting down that they're still working on their housing application, but they're telling us that in a year or 6 months from now they would like to retire, but they want to get on the waiting list, which is the way to do, is to plan ahead. So, and sometimes people have real estate to sell, so they have to try to work that out, go on our waiting list, and if we call them, are they able to move then, or are they going to want to stay there and try to sell their house first because they don't want to abandon the property and move into a subsidized apartment? And if the property doesn't sell, it could be sitting on the market for 6 months or a year. So then they're paying the taxes and whatever. Even if it's paid for property, they're still paying for the taxes on their rental or on their home loan. And then they're paying 30% of their income for the rent with us. So it gets to be a kind of a balancing game.
Right. And there just seems to be a lot of factors when it comes to kind of making that decision. You know, are there resources for helping people kind of map out that situation?
Unless there's a counseling agency that, you know, is that would do that locally around here, that would be the service they would have to tap into. You know, I don't know if Aging Disability Resource Center, that would be my best bet, would be to refer them to them and have them get hooked up with somebody and somebody that can work with them and help with that.
That is placed on the family member to start those processes and looking and searching and calling and knowing that something is needed within that year or so, and the family knows we have to do something, and they're out searching too. So I think a lot gets put on the family to help out the seniors.
Can that put a strain on relationships between a senior and their family as the family, you know, is having to pick up more of the slack of that planning?
Planning and also the caretaking, because if they're in their home and they need more services, sometimes the family is the one that's picking up the services to get them to the appointments and bringing the food and cook and clean. So I don't know if that's going to cause a friction or anything like that, but it's putting stress on that the family too. But you had mentioned about waiting lists. We have waiting lists also for our housing, and people put themselves on more than one list. So if we're going through our list, someone might say, I'm not ready, like Patrick mentioned, I'm not ready now, call me again. And then we just keep going down the list. So they may remain on the list for quite a while, but our housing units do have waiting lists. We don't know how quickly people always want to come in, but they put themselves on five different waiting lists, hoping that something someday would come up for them. And then it's the coordination of, are you ready now? Do you have to sell your house? Are you going to rent it out while you're moving? There's a lot of factors to make that final decision to go. And we call transitioning to the independent apartments or the assisted living. And assisted living is for medical needs mostly. You can be an independent. Oh, we do have three of our five assisted living buildings are considered blended facilities, and that's where you can start out as an independent senior, which is great, and age in place, if that's how you want to call it. If a person needs more medical needs at some point, can contract for assisted living services, stay in the same building, not have to move again, and work through all that transition, And then if their health changes at some point, they can go back to the independent status. They can do that without even leaving their apartment. So we have three of those buildings that we call blended facilities, two in West Salem and one in Holman right now. So I like that option if I ever have to seek senior housing.
Gail Bressel, Assistant to the Executive Director at Bethany St. Joseph Corporation, is here with us today to talk about local resources for senior housing in the seventh installment of our monthly series on aging. Also joining us in studio is Todd Mandel, Community Development Director at Cooley Cap, and Patrick Dinger, Executive Director of La Crosse County Housing Authority. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on what local communities are doing to provide more housing options for those 65 and older. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to some of the resources we talked about today. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're continuing our monthly series on aging in Wisconsin and neighboring states. As more of our population reaches the age of 65 and older, creating housing options that are affordable and supportive continue to be a challenge for local communities. A third of seniors have annual incomes below the poverty line, but many need support in order to remain in their homes. Joining us to talk about what resources exist for seniors in the Cooley region is Patrick Dinger, Executive Director of La Crosse County Housing Authority, Todd Mandel, Community Development Director at Cooley Cap, and Gail Bressel, Assistant to the Executive Director at Bethany St. Joseph Corporation. And Todd, you know, earlier you were talking about, aging in place. And I know that this idea is, you know, definitely become more popular over the last few years. And, you know, the idea of seniors wanting to age at their home. How much does aging in place kind of depend on other resources, be it for transportation, like Patrick's mentioned, food, other things like that?
Aging in place really depends on a number of factors. Most significantly, it depends on the condition of the senior, what their needs are, and if their needs can be met in their residence where they are. And that's not a static decision or a static condition, right? It changes over time. And there are benefits the longer that someone can age in place. They tend to be more comfortable. They have their support networks around them. We've talked today multiple times about the value of being with your faith community and where your family and your friends are, just somebody who can check on you if nothing else. But that changes as the condition changes. So we see seniors who start aging in place and then something happens and that's no longer, a viable option. It is significant as far as where they are. It is easier to age in place in the city of La Crosse, in the city of Onalaska. It is less easy in Holman. It is even less easy in Rockland. It's much harder once you get out to Ontario and Hillsboro. Partly because a big focus of that, if you're at that point where you're making that decision about aging in place and you need modifications and you need your home modified to meet your needs, you have health concerns. And then accessing healthcare, as Patrick said earlier, is really a very significant decision point. There are ways that model gets fixed. We're starting to see more healthcare clinics pushed out into rural communities. The increase of telemedicine and of diagnostic tools, both in the home and in these rural communities, is increasing. But the fact remains that most of the critical medical care happens in La Crosse, or particularly for veterans, it's even more challenging because they have to go typically to Tomah or Madison if they want treatment, or La Crosse to the clinic here. Mm-hmm. And that just drives, that simple fact drives so many other decisions. And it is a real challenge. And transportation is a really big piece of that puzzle.
And Patrick, from your perspective, are there enough resources in La Crosse County to kind of address these needs of seniors as they, you know, make different housing decisions?
Well, I've never heard that people cannot get the services, because I think it's mandatory too that the age of disability or the county provide services. So, but they have to be made aware of them, as I said, and we do our part by calling and referring people so that they can be evaluated. So I think that's mandatory that services must be provided if they're made aware of. Mm-hmm. So, because they have home health aides that come out to our apartments and help right there and help them do their laundry and bathing and personal hygiene needs.
So. Do you think most seniors are aware of all the resources that might be available to them in the community?
Not necessarily. So that could be where a bridge of information could maybe be developed better. So we do a newsletter every other month, and we try to put information in there for people. So if they take the time to read it.
Hearing everyone talk, it seems that each of your organizations are really focusing on the immediate needs, and that because of waiting lists and different situations, that, you know, really focusing on the kind of present need of seniors. But Todd, are you guys having time to kind of plan for the future and what the need is going to look like in the next 5 years, in the next year even?
Oh, I think that need can really be delineated into three different subsets, right? So there's the affluent or well enough to do senior, and the private market is addressing their needs pretty well. And there's a lot of future planning. There are investors who are willing to make that investment because they're getting the rate of return that they want, and they see the market coming, right? They know that the graying of our population is simply going to mean more business for this kind of high-end senior housing. And I mean, you can see it in La Crosse, you can see it in Toma, you can see it elsewhere. It's not in short supply, and there is not a dearth of investors. There's plenty of investors willing to line up and make that happen. There's then kind of that middle tier, which is really, I think, where like the Bethany St. Joseph's fill. And I mean, you know, they can talk more about how they're meeting that need. For us, the biggest challenge strategically is funding. When you're talking about low-income seniors, they can't pay for a facility. There's just no way for them to pay for a facility. So you can't attract an investor to give you money to build that facility because you're not going to pay them back. Public housing has traditionally been the respite in America, and the way we help house seniors who fall in poverty or close to poverty. But as a nation, we have, in the last 10 years, decided that's not something we do anymore. So, but we also haven't decided this is what we do. We've just said we're not doing that, but we haven't come up with the answer on what we are going to do. We've theoretically said we'll give them rent subsidies, but then we've cut funding for rent subsidies. We've theoretically said that, well, nonprofits like Cooley Camp will build specific senior housing, but then we've cut the funding to do that sort of work. We've said that tax credit developers will develop low-income housing tax credit projects targeted to seniors, but then we've reduced the amount of tax credits available and how effective those tax credits are. So on the one hand, we've said we're not going to do the traditional solution, which we can certainly have, a reasonable policy debate on whether public housing is the best and right solution. But if we're going to say we're going to do this other thing, then we kind of have to do this other thing or just admit we're not doing anything. And that's really the challenge, because nonprofits like Cooley Cap, we can't magically print money. Life would be a lot easier if we could. So since we can't, there literally isn't the capital to just go and build the housing that's in demand. And we understand that. It requires a public investment. And at this point, for any variety of reasons, our nation has chosen not to make that investment. And eventually that may catch up with us.
Patrick, what's your perspective on this issue that's Todd is talking about with the public investment in housing?
Yeah, we find the same issues. We have to provide housing with what we have. We are not allowed to, they're not providing any grants to build any additional one, and we cannot commit any funding existing funding that we do have that would obligate the government into any more ongoing rent subsidy payments. So we've gotten that in writing, and we've gotten reminder notices, in fact, recently about that, reminding us. I believe it's called the Faircloth Housing Law. that anything you had as of a certain year, 1990, I believe it is, whatever you had as of that year that that was published, that's all you're allowed to have. So they've not provided any. There are certain, like Todd said, vouchers, certain populations, homeless veterans, persons living with AIDS, there are certain specific populations that they've provided specific pools of money for, but for general housing, in addition, public housing, there's been no new funding. So we did build 50 apartments. We got a $3.5 million development grant back in 1990-91, and we built 50 apartments with that, but that's the last funding notice that that I've seen since then to offer funding for additional apartments.
And do you think public housing, you know, like the La Crosse County Housing Authority provides, you know, is that the answer to this issue? Or you know, do we need to be putting our heads together and looking at what, you know, kind of the next phase of affordable and accessible, you know, senior housing is?
Well, there's obviously a need for more apartments. If you've got like a 1 to 2 year waiting list, you don't want to overbuild on the other hand either. And but then the supportive services is what we're seeing the lack of. So if you, right now the push is to help work with the chronically homeless and to get them, you know, off the streets, and that's all good, but sometimes chronically homeless people have services that they need so that they can live in a apartment community with other persons. So there may be antisocial issues, certain fears, phobias, whatever, so they can sometimes not be successful living in that environment. So somebody recently said, so they got the gold ticket. Well, yes, they did, but to keep the gold ticket, you have to be able to live in an apartment community and live sociably acceptable with other people in the building. So, because we have to enforce a lease, we can't let one person disrupt the entire community, or you know, even if it could be a safety issue, too.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about senior housing in the Cooley region, what's available and what's still needed as the population continues to age. We're here with Patrick Dinger, Executive Director of La Crosse County Housing Authority, Gail Bressel, Assistant to the Executive Director at Bethany St. Joseph Corporation, and Todd Mandel, Community Development Director at Cooley Cap. And Gail, you know, we're talking about what organizations are doing to kind of plan for the future. What's Bethany St. Joseph looking at, you know, for the future of senior housing?
We continue to look at the outreach communities, and also even in La Crosse, are we meeting the needs in La Crosse the best that we can, or is it time for us to start building again? But building takes money, and just to see where we're at financially. But yes, we have been asked by communities to see if we can come into their communities. So there's a need out there with those waiting lists. Communities want this kind of housing. Their seniors are asking for it. They don't want to have to move to another community. And I do know a few cases from a local community that did not provide senior housing, went all the way 20 miles away just to get the service that they wanted, the two-bedroom assisted living, and left their wonderful community because of that. So we were asked to come and talk to that original community to see if we could provide. So as far as what we're doing, it's continuing with a listening ear just to see what communities would like, see if we have the finances to do it, and just keep looking at it.
And Todd, I know that, you know, housing issues are sometimes at a federal level, but, you know, looking at the state of Wisconsin, how does Wisconsin compare to our neighbors, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, whatever that might be, as far as, you know, senior housing options?
I don't think we're dramatically different. Like you said, housing is often starts at a federal focus. It's partly because the money involved is so large. I mean, just to build out a 20-unit senior housing facility is going to be $4, 5, 6 million. And so that's, you know, do that five times over or six times over, you're talking 36, $40 million before you blink your eyes, and you've built 120 units. That's not a lot. Resource-wise, it's a resource-heavy activity, which is why it tends to be a federal primarily federal activity. You know, others, Minnesota in particular, tends to be more progressive in housing and in state resources for housing. They have the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, which is a state-sponsored kind of nonprofit intermediary that handles and coordinates housing. They have more state dollars that go to housing. Wisconsin has very little state dollars, actually, that go to housing. At the federal level, they did just bring online the National Housing Trust Fund, which the way those funds are designed could theoretically be a real boon to senior housing. In Wisconsin, they're run through the Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority. However, at the same time, again, at the federal level, Congress, you know, makes the effort to cut existing funding in other programs equal to the amount of the Housing Trust Fund cash, right? So it's like two steps forward and exactly two steps backwards. And that doesn't move the needle anywhere. And the decision we kind of have to make, in my opinion, is somewhere along the line, we kind of as a nation back in the 60s decided that seniors in poverty was something we didn't want to see. We didn't want to see homeless seniors, and we didn't want to see seniors in poverty. Social Security was that process. Medicare was that process, right? That's how we kept seniors. And public housing or subsidized housing or however you want to call it was part of that process. We see rollbacks in all of those areas, perhaps none more so, though, than housing. And I think it's because housing is somewhat invisible. If a senior is in a house, we consider them housed. Whether that house is about to fall down around them is not a question we ask because we're not in the house. We just know they're housed until we go in that house and then we go, oh my gosh, how does that, you know, just a quick story of years ago, one of my first projects I ever did, we were out in rural Toma with this elderly couple. When you sat in their kitchen and talked to them, you literally could see through the ceiling and the floor. It was this old dilapidated trailer and we replaced it. But to replace it, we had to meet with the town council and the town fire person. And as we're meeting out there in the winter to discuss whether or not we should tear this structure down, the fire chief asked, well, are the owners going to be here? I'm like, they are here. They're in the house. And he looked at it and goes, somebody lives in that? I'm like, yeah, they do. And because it's their only option. And that isn't a unique story.
You know, Patrick, you've mentioned that, addressing more people who are in homelessness. And I know that the city of La Crosse has really started to pay attention to this issue and different community resources are kind of coming together. You know, how do you think that as we, you know, there's this greater push to, help the homeless population access public housing, is that going to put a greater strain on options for seniors?
Right, because there's only, like in our case, 140 apartments available. So if the government, mandates that we should service a certain specific population, then that's going to take less apartments available for the other population. So 140 apartments, and we, have to decide as a community, as an agency, who gets first shot at those. So right now, as I said, we have elderly disabled preference. That is our preference.
Mm-hmm. Is that difficult to see, people who really do need housing options who literally don't have any other option?
It is. It's frustrating. And you see people coming and applying for housing. And there's also, we have family housing as well, or duplex housing, I should say. And you have families coming from a domestic violence shelter looking for housing. And we have to give them the unfortunate news that it's 6 months to a year. So, and then they have to go back to, being abused if they, because if they can't get affordable housing, they're either going to have to go back to where they came from and then hope for family counseling, whatever, to work that situation out. But it's frustrating and heartbreaking to hear the stories. Sometimes I've had a senior come in my office and say she didn't know she had to pay the rent or buy her medicine, so they had to make hard choices as well. So even with their existing tenants who have subsidies, sometimes they still have to choose, or they pay their rent. That's always people's first choice. But they come in and sometimes they can't afford their medicines. If people cut their medicine dose in half, whatever, so that they can afford to buy food and rent.
We've been talking with Patrick Dinger, Executive Director of La Crosse County Housing Authority, Todd Mandel, Community Development Director at Cooley Cap, and Gail Bressel, Assistant to the Executive Director at Bethany St. Joseph Corporation, about challenges and successes for senior housing in the Cooley region. Today's show is the seventh in our monthly series on issues related to aging. Every month, we hope to explore a new topic related to the growing population of people 65 and older in our area. In August, during the next show in our series, we'll talk about how the arts are helping seniors accept and celebrate the process of aging. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto. Our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. And Matt Clark is our student producer. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to some of the resources we talked about today. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.